Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, we're joined by Lance Martin. He's the owner of Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate. He's been in the business since he's 19 and is usually involved in short sales and REOs. Lance, welcome back.
Thank you, Bruce.
You know, if you were looking up the word short sale in 1985, I'm not sure you'd find it anywhere. California doesn't have those a lot.
Yeah, well, there certainly wasn't a market for it. And, you know, I mean, how many properties did you truly have that were, you know, upside down in 85?
I think that's probably what I mean. Yeah, this is right. This is a very unusual segment of time that we have right now. Now, I mean, everyone knows what a short sale is, but that's really not the California that you and I grew up in.
Well, it's true, but I'm not sure everybody does know what a short sale is, because I did do a lot of short sales in the 90s. The equity spread wasn't maybe as severe as it is now. But the short sale of the 90s is certainly not the same short sale that we're doing today, or frankly, even the same short sale that we did 4 or 5 years ago. I would say almost everybody out there, irrespective of what type of property they have, when they bought it, whether it was owner-occupied or non-owner-occupied, or frankly, even if they have a hardship or not, everybody is a candidate for an approved short sale. And that wasn't the case before. I mean, the criteria was so crazy. I mean, I don't know if it was crazy. Actually, the criteria was probably fairly good, you know.
Now it's crazy.
Yeah, now it's crazy. I mean, yeah, pretty much anybody. You know, I mentioned in the earlier segment about some of my landlords on my property management side doing short sales. You know, that wasn't really an option even 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah,
they weren't granting short sale approvals on non-owner occupied properties.
No, and actually, I was going to ask you about that because I wasn't really sure. I haven't heard too many investors get them, but so you're saying that that's now prevalent.
Absolutely. The hardship, and frankly, I don't even think the hardship is really as much a requirement as it was before. But well, yeah, investor properties with multiple rentals are being approved for short sale transactions all day long. All day long.
What's interesting about, you know, the hardship, I felt like we went from stated income to stated hardship.
Right.
So there was what do we need to say? Oh, yeah, that's us.
Right. Well, I think the hardship now, I mean, it used to be your hardship letter had to have some sort of hardship. You know, I lost my job, there's been a health problem, I've been relocated, you know, whatever. Now the hardship is, you basically write a letter, says, well, you know, I kind of got caught up in this real estate market the last few years. That's my hardship.
well, you're right, and then. You know, everybody qualifies.
Everybody qualifies. That's right. Yeah.
Now, you know, if I was a buyer, I'll just put my retail buyer's hat on, make an offer on a short sale, and I'm going to speak on, you know, what the process was like 2 years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong. I might get an answer 6 months from now.
Correct.
Which would make me not interested in ever making a second short sale offer, because I'm assuming I would have been long gone by the time the answer came down the pike. So compared doing a short sale today to a couple years ago.
Yeah, you know, it's really not that much different.
Uh-oh.
if it was taking, you know, 6 or 8 or 10, or, you know, we've had some in the office that were well over 12 months from start to finish, maybe we've shaved, you know, a month or two off of that, you know. You know, I've got one going on right now that, you know, it took us 6-7 months to get an approval, and maybe 2 years ago it might have taken us 8 or 9 months to get an approval.
Okay, help
which
me.
Which has soured, frankly, has soured a lot of the consumers.
Yeah.
Frankly, the owners are frustrated because it's stressful. I mean, they want to know whether they're going to be able to get out from under the property. The buyers have just, you know, I mean, good Lord, who the heck wants to wait 7 or 8 months, not only even to close escrow, just to find out whether or not they'll accept the deal?
Yeah, their whole life is on hold waiting.
Yep, and then frankly, the real estate community is just the same way. I mean, goodness gracious! I mean, you take a short sale listing, and you're maybe going to get paid 10 or 12 months ago, and there's a big maybe there. And
yeah.
Buyers and the agents working with buyers are the same way, you know. But honestly, now you really don't have a lot of choice if you're a buyer in the marketplace. Like we talked about earlier, the standard sales are a small percentage. You know, the REOs, I mean, they're there, but, you know, frankly, the larger percentage of inventory on the market right now is short sale.
Well, so, you know, this is the part that's hard for me to understand because I'm a lender and a servicer both. So what's the holdup? Are we not being able to talk to somebody that has the authority to answer the question?
You know, I think that's some of the holdup, but to be fair, let me point some of the blame towards the real estate community and you know, folks like myself and realtors out there. You know, it's really easy for, you know, buyers and sellers and agents to put 100% of the blame on the banks, and I would say probably 50% of the delay and the time frame is because of the banks and the investor and the process they have to go through. But there's a lot of these delays are self-inflicted, you know. Frankly, realtors not really understanding the process, taking short sale listings, you know, banks requesting certain documentation and the agents themselves taking way too long, you know, to check the box and get the documentation, or the seller for that matter, taking way too long to put the packages together to get the information in there that the bank requires. I think 50% of our problems are self-inflicted.
Okay.
By, again, either sellers not doing what they need to do to get the documents, or frankly, agents doing a poor job working with the bank.
Well, take me through the process. I'm a client that am upside down, and I'm a candidate for a short sale approval. What steps do we start with?
Well, the first thing, you know, and this isn't a short process, but I'll condense it. I would sit down with you as a seller and basically, you know, this could take 2 hours and go through, okay, you know, this is what's going to be required. We're going to, first of all, you know, I need financial information from you. The bank's going to require, you know, bank statements, and they're going to require that hardship letter, assuming there is a hardship. Even if there's not, you know, if the hardship is the market turned on you, then that's what you're going to give me.
Okay.
Bank statements, tax returns, you know, basically asset balance sheet. You're going to have to give them a profit and loss, the whole nine yards. And a lot of sellers don't want to do that. And quite honestly, some of them don't want to do it because they're providing documentation, which might be contrary to the documentation they provided when they took out the loan. So that could be a little problematic. Frankly, I'm also advising the sellers of, you know, the time frame. You know, be prepared for this to take 6, 7, 8, 9 months. If you're not prepared to stomach that, then, you know, you're not going to do well through the short sale process. You know, obviously there's credit implications. Generally speaking, it's going to be much, much better for, you know, sellers to do a short sale and have their property go through foreclosure. Frankly, most of my clients that have come to me on a short sale basis are behind and then maybe haven't made payments for months and months and months. And then frankly, I'm also preparing them to write a check. You know, I mean, not all of these short sales are approved with the seller walking away completely scot-free without having to write a check. So I'm kind of preparing them that, you know, hey, if we get to the close of escrow and the bank's going to require you to write a few bucks, or maybe the association's going to require you to write a check, or somewhere along the line the seller has to come up with some money. You know, frankly, if my client's not prepared to do that, I'm probably not going to take their short sale at all. You know, if they're not willing to come up with a little bit of cash at the end. But in most cases, that's not necessary.
Right.
But I'm still certainly preparing them for it.
Okay. And the check is for making up some of the principal?
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, you may have a bank that's, you know, for whatever reason, or maybe it's a second trustee. And again, in my case, it seems like the second trustees are on almost every single short sale that I'm doing.
Okay.
But they may come back and they'll approve it and they'll say, okay, well, great. But, you know, we want you to, you know, we'll write off, you know, $70,000, but we want you to give us a check for $5,000. Or maybe they, you know, want you to make payments on $10,000 for 10 years at 0% interest or something like that. And, you know, I mean, there's just thousands of different scenarios that you can run into with these short sales, and especially with the second trust deed holders.
Okay.
And rightfully so. I mean, and you're a private second trust deed holder. What's your motivation to just walk away and give them and walk away from nothing? You know, not a whole lot.
Right.
You know? I mean, you got to give me something. And they hold a lot of the cards in the game.
Just curious, and if you don't know, this is perfectly fine to say that's, or you don't want to commit. If I have a second, and that second was part of a purchase money transaction,
yep.
If they
right.
discount that, the IRS really doesn't have. It would be my understanding that the IRS doesn't have a way to bill you for forgiveness of debt.
That is correct. That is correct. And I'm not going to go past my memory, but there was legislation passed, I think it was a couple years ago. I believe it's in effect through 2013, maybe a little bit longer, which in effect indicates if a lender is approving a short sale, and that's going through the system, that there is no deficiency, and you're not going to have to worry about that 1099 coming through the system for debt forgiveness. That wasn't always the case.
Right.
And again, there's confusion on that, and let me stop right now and do the disclosure. I'm not a tax guy. consult your tax professional. But not for the most part, the way it stands right now, the worry of the 1099 coming in for debt forgiveness from the IRS is not on the table right now. That's gone.
Now, that's if it was purchase money or if it was owner-occupied with a refi?
Well, either way on the short sale transactions right now. Now, the old rule used to be if it was purchase money, then you were basically exempt from that. But that wasn't necessarily the 1099. That was the lender coming after you for a deficiency. But with the new rules in play, the way I understand them, is as far as the 1099 for debt forgiveness, having to pay tax on the difference, that is out the window right now. It's not on the table.
And I think that's only good until January of 2013, actually.
Okay, yeah, and like I say, I don't have the date. It wouldn't surprise me at all, frankly, if that is renewed.
Yeah.
At least for now, for this year, we're good.
I'm a servicer of a lot of loans, and they're all private money. And I guess when I hear comments about the servicer's interest and the lender's interest, sometimes are in conflict, and I have a hard time understanding that. Is that true? And what conflict is there?
Yeah, you hear that a lot, and I'm not certain, to be honest with you, where that's one of those inside baseball things that I've still been trying to figure out for the last few years is to, where is the disconnect? And you'll hear that at different times, servicers are pointing fingers at mortgage insurance companies or at the lender or whatever it happens to be. I think there were some incentives put in place with some of these proposals over the years that, the way I've had it explained to me, it actually incentivizes the servicers to keep these in the process, longer. But to be honest with you, I don't know enough of it about
okay.
it to speak with any sort of authority as to what problem that creates in the day-to-day, processes for closing these things.
I've heard of transactions where someone's doing a short sale and being induced by the lender by getting sometimes $35,000 to do a short sale.
Yep. Chase is probably out in front on this. We've done a couple of these already, I don't have a Chase loan, but I've had clients come in with letters that they frankly just look like form letters that initially you would look at and think, well, this can't be accurate. This has got to be a joke. Let's throw it in the trash. But they're actually indicating, hey, if you cooperate, and this is the bank talking to the owner, if you cooperate and you're interested in doing a short sale, then we will pay you, 10, 20, 30. The highest one I've ever had is $30,000 at close of escrow, no questions asked. And Chase has been really, really aggressive. And to my knowledge, that program is still out there. And I've had at least two where Chase called me with the seller on the other end of the telephone. Introduced me to the seller and said, hey, by the way, at close of escrow, the seller's getting $30,000, and would you help him out? And like I say, they're aggressively pursuing that.
What's the rationale behind that?
Well, I personally think, and this is just my opinion, I have no firsthand knowledge. I think in a lot of cases, this is a way for maybe Chase and other banks, frankly, to clean up some of their their bad portfolio.
I agree
with that. The Linda Green RoboSigners that are still out there, I'm sure they have a way to identify the files that are, maybe the paperwork isn't exactly perfect. So how easy would it be if you could identify that, go to these folks, basically prompt them into a short sale, give them $10,000 for the pleasure, and in the long run, how much of a money saver is that for the banks? Now you've got a brand new set of loan documents and a brand new deed of trust. All the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and Linda Green's signature is not on them. you know, it's again, I've heard different things from different, you know, folks on the street that there's a targeted effort in that regard, not only with doing the short sales with, but also doing refis. You know, you might, I've got a loan with Bank of America. Maybe the paperwork's messed up. You get the phone call from B of Animus using pulling them out of a hat.
Right.
And you get the phone call from the B of A folks and says, hey, let's go ahead and refi that for you. And we'll drop your rate a point, you know, no cost, no appraisal, no escrow. Well, what happens when you do that? Well, you get a brand new set of loan documents.
That they're probably not going to lose.
Well, exactly. Now they've got them in hand. They're, you know, if there was a problem with the loan documents previously, well, that's no longer an issue. So I got to think, and again, that's just my own little conspiracy theory going on, but I got to think there's a lot of that going on out there.
Yeah, that at least makes some sense, because the lender is not usually doing things in not that's not in their interest.
Right.
But I was, yeah, just thinking, that's a lot of money to give away. Have the lenders concluded that a short sale nets them more than any other method of getting rid of an upside-down property?
Well, I don't know if they've concluded that or not. I mean, if you look at the overall time it takes, I generally would think it wouldn't, but I know that I think the general rule is it's in there. It is financially in the lender's interest to do a short sale as opposed to go through the REO process. The part that just doesn't make sense, if that was truly the case, you would think they would be able to speed it up a little bit, you know. But maybe just the sheer volume of properties through the system are just such a magnitude that it's challenging.
When you get a listing that's going to be a short sale candidate, is there a flurry of offers, and then at that point you attempt to see what the lender will do, or do you make that attempt prior to the listing?
Well, it depends. You know, B of A's got a good program out there, and they're trying to do this almost like a pre-approved short sale process, where you can, you know, kind of do a little bit of the process up in advance. But generally speaking, you know, you list the property in today's market, the inventory being as low as it is, I mean, you're going to get offers. I take them into the seller. We'll pick the one that is highest and best. We think they got the best chance of closing it, and get it into the bank, whether it's through their portal system or however method that you need to get it submitted to them. And then you hurry up and wait and hope, frankly, that the buyer is going to stick around through the process and that it's not going to take, you know, 6 months even to get an approval. Because then, frankly, on the opposite side, now you finally do get an approval and you do have a buyer that is, you know, still ready, willing, and quote-unquote able. Well, now you would think that the buyers would have taken that 6 months to get all their loan package straight and get everything good and ready to go. But now, in time, you're still, you know, I've got a couple going right now. I've had the short sale approval with the bank, you know, more than 90 days ago. And, you know, now the buyer's struggling. You know, like, well, geez, you had 9 months to get yourself, you know, wrapped up and packaged and ready to go, and apparently you didn't do anything in that 9 month window. You waited until you got the approval process. So
we're starting to see in the hard money loan business a very big increase in short sales that are being purchased by investors.
Yep.
And it would seem to me that while they probably weren't the original offer, but an all cash secondary offer that came in after
a substitute after the fact. Yep.
Is that what you're seeing happen?
I don't know that I could say I'm personally seeing a lot of that right now, but I think there's a huge opportunity there. Specifically, you know, you mentioned B of A again, and there's a few other banks that are now allowing substitute buyers. Whereas, in other words, you know, I'm in escrow with you. It takes us 9 months to get an approval, and then you know, for whatever you couldn't get the loan and you just gave up. You know, up until just, you know, I think it was last summer, you would have to start that entire process over.
Right.
Now the banks are saying, okay, well, that's silly. We've got basically the short sale approved at, you know, $150,000 or whatever it happens to be. You know, you put the property back on the market. 3 days later, you get an investor, comes in, all cash, $150,000, whatever it happens to be. And they're basically letting that new buyer start the process and more or less substitute for the buyer that was originally in there. And there is opportunity there. Absolutely. I mean, you got to do your homework. You got to know, you know, you got to keep an eye on the MLS and frankly, develop the relationships. And I frankly think there are opportunities for investors and frankly, just traditional owner-occupant buyers to get some good deals on the short sale if they've got the patience. You know, if you don't have to move into that house and have a birthday party 30 days from now.
Yeah, it's like a pipeline or a factory. You load it up and a certain percentage of them will work.
Yep.
What are some of the reasons that short sales get denied even now?
Well, you know, we still have the value issues. You know, we've got an offer at, you know, 150 and the appraisal comes in higher. So, you know, we're struggling with that. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest challenges that we've seen. We're just not able to get the value agreed upon. Because frankly, let's face it, you're a buyer. The house is worth 150. You know you're going to have to wait 9 months. You're not going to offer 150. I mean, you're going to offer much less than that. The seller is going to accept it. They don't care. They don't care whether it's 150 or 120.
Right.
Especially given our earlier part of the conversation, as far as, you know, debt forgiveness and, you know, taxing on that. You know, sellers less interested. They don't care if the short sale is 10,000 or 110,000, because they're not going to be paying taxes on the difference and all the rest of that. But anyway, then you get that cold slap of reality when the bank goes out and does their appraisal. So most of the experience, I think, in our office with transactions failing comes into when the appraisal comes into play. And then the buyers just aren't willing to meet that, the bank's appraiser or whatever it happens to be. There's other issues, but right now, because it used to be seller issues. You know, seller had money, or seller wanted to, bank wanted the seller to come in and, you know, write a note, maybe to pay off a little bit of a second over time, and the seller said no. There's not as much of that going on right now. The bulk of it really is just value arguments.
Are loan mods qualified in the same manner? Are they increasingly easier to get?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
We purposely in our office stay away from them. All I know is the information I'm seeing, it appears as though the loan modifications are just playing such an insignificant role in the overall numbers. And then, of course, the ones that are being done, and some of this data I get from you is, you know, the percentage of failure is so high.
Yeah, they fail half the time.
Yeah.
When you're doing a short sale, let's go to like an FHA loan where, and I'm not in that lending world, so somebody funds an FHA loan, and then let's say they fund the loan in 2009, and now they're upside down. The lender has kind of a guarantee on their loss, right?
Yep.
So what is their inducement to cooperate with a short sale?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And obviously the guarantee on their loss applies, of course, in regards to an actual foreclosure.
Right.
So when you're dealing with the short sale process, well, the property has not gone through a foreclosure. So, you know, what the procedure is behind the scenes on that, how much of that, you know, loss is insured and who's taking that loss is I'm sure battled out between HUD and the originating lender. But yeah, you're absolutely right with that. You know, what's the incentive for the mortgage company to take that loss? You know, a bigger thing, just to shift gears a little bit, because I know we're limited on time. You know, we've got that. You know, they just came out, I think, a month or two ago. You know, with this legislation, which is basically going to force these banks to give sellers answers. I think it's 60 days from the time of the short sale being pushed forward. And, you know, the real estate community was cheering it, and I think if you knew anything about the process, we thought, wow, well, that's fantastic. Now there's legislation in place that will force the lenders to give an approval and or a denial within 60 days. And we all cheered it and thought it was great, and then we started thinking about it a little bit more, and if you really think it through, the concern is an obvious one. You know, now I'm a lender. By law, I have to give you an answer within 60 days. Well, guess what? If I'm not prepared on day 59 to give you an answer, what's the answer going to be?
Yeah, it's
going to be a denial.
Exactly.
So now, in hindsight, you know, no good law shall go unpunished, so to speak, you know. So now, in hindsight, what we thought might have been a good law for the industry to push the short sales through the pipeline faster. And again, it's too early to say, but I think the end result is going to be more denials.
Lance, we've run out of time. Give me your website one more time, please.
It's www.cbpre.com.
All right. Lance, thank you very much for taking time to share with us the world of REOs and short sales.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.